Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good evening, everybody. Time to smash it up on a Monday night here on Warchant TV alongside the managing editor of Warchant.com. He's Ira Schoffel. My name is Tom Lang, and you are watching the Monday Smash presented by State Farm agent Russ Voorhis here on Warchant TV. Hit the thumbs up as you enter the stream tonight. Hope you all are doing well. We've got a lot of things to talk about. Obviously, the spring showcase on Saturday, the transfer portal activity. Ira, it's all happening right now, I believe. First up, you're going to read word for word the transcript of what happened today in the courtroom. So we're going to be here. You're just going to read everything that Judge Cooper had to say, everything the lawyers had to say, and however long that goes, that's how we're going to go. Do I have that right?
Yeah, I'm going to cite all of the case law that they brought up and all of the subsection line 27 of paragraph 34. Yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. But yeah, we'll recap that real quick. I talked about it a little bit on Jeff's show. It's been on the website. I'm sure everybody watching this knows, but basically to kind of the cliff notes is Florida State's lawsuit against the ACC has kind of hit a little stumbling block. The judge ruled that Florida State in their complaint and in their amended complaint didn't spell out properly why Leon County is the proper jurisdiction for a case that involves FSU and the ACC, which is obviously located in North Carolina. That was the ACC's contention. Florida State basically didn't have it spelled out correctly. So the judge is making them go back and amend their complaint. They have 7 days to do that. And it sounds like it's a formality. They just have to include that language in there. They'll go back to the ACC has up to 20 days to respond. Somebody pointed this out to me that's fair, that the ACC could at that point say, you know what, they met the burden. We complained because it wasn't proper before. And Judge Cooper had already stricken one of their complaints, and they basically rescinded one of their own. So there's not much left there. So if Florida State puts in the language that's accurate, I guess the ACC technically could just say, you know what, we're good. We'll withdraw our notice to or our motion to dismiss the case. I don't think that's going to happen, but it could. But anyway, basically, this is going to hold the case up for about a month or so while they go through that process and then come back before him. And then ultimately, it seems like the judge is going to rule in Florida State's favor. It felt like he wanted to do that anyway. He just wants to be careful because it's such a big case.
I was popping in and out, Ira, of course, at JCS started at 1 o'clock. And, you know, there was a lot. There was a lot of back and forth between the lawyers and obviously Judge Cooper. But it seemed to me that it had the energy of, in very simple terms, not a legal mind here, if you're in a math class and the teacher says, you got to give me the answer and show me
your work. Right.
Exactly. And you bring up just the answer and the teacher says, I can't accept this. You got to go back and show me your work. And I think Judge Cooper was trying to get them over the finish line in a sense, not that he's biased, but it seemed like he was giving latitude. So here it is. If the ACC wants to drag its feet, Ira, because there's a proceeding in North Carolina that they'd like to finish first or get closer to the finish line first, they can do so now. And it costs Florida State about a month. That's a lot of billable hours they didn't have to pay for, I don't think.
Right. And there is somebody mentioned our thread on the tribal council, a lot of attorneys and a lot of people that stayed at a hotel last night that says that they make you feel like you're an attorney. But one of the, I think, resident legal experts said, you know, you're also forgetting the fact that Florida State's appealing the ruling earlier in North Carolina. So that case is kind of in a standstill while they go through that appeal, and you don't know how long that's going to take. So it may not. We'll see. We don't know whether or not it's going to have an impact. The other thing I want to touch on, because I saw somebody mention in the chat, is the judge did order both sides to go through some mediation within 120 days. Just wanted to clarify that for people that weren't watching the proceeding, because I didn't really write about it other than in the message board thread. But basically, any case that comes before him, he sends them to mediation along with proceeding with the trial. He believes staunchly, and I think it's the position of this circuit court, but also him in particular, that most things can be worked out with mediation before it actually goes through the whole legal process. It's usually better for everybody, cheaper for everybody. So he's ordering them to go through mediation, but he can't order them to actually do anything. Like, so they're going to have to go within the next 120 days. People from the attorneys from FSU, the ACC are going to have to go sit down with a mediator. Some common ground. Is there a way to come to an agreement? It's not arbitration. He clarified that where you're ordered to come to an agreement. This is, or there's going to be an agreement decided for you. This is, he's giving them a chance to do it. We'll see whether or not that happens. But the one other note, and I'm sorry, we'll get off this real quick. But the other, I thought, newsworthy item was the attorney for FSU, Peter Rush, I believe his name is, said, you know, if it wasn't for the grant of rights, this was just in conversation. He said, if it wasn't for the grant of rights, which comes with maybe a $450 or $500 million in media rights costs, that if it was just the exit fee, which is $130 to $140 million, the Florida State could sit down at a table right now and negotiate with the ACC. I think most of us have kind of always thought that, but this was the first time we've heard them say it, that if it was just $140, we'll sit down right now and we'll figure out a way to cut a check. So that's one little nugget of news, I guess.
Yeah, and it confirms what the board had talked about last year, which was they kind of scoffed at the notion of the exit fee themselves, but never in a legal proceeding, never with representation has Florida State officially taken that position. But yeah, it's, you know, there's a couple of things that have floated out the last 2 days where these parties have met, adversarial as they are, in Leon County. You know, it was last time that they convened, you had an ACC lawyer, Ira, saying that, you know, well, we could sell these rights to Florida State to a different league or do it to a different network. I'd never heard that before. And then Florida State again today saying that the exit fee is no big deal. So, I mean, they're setting the parameters. It's almost like right. There's mediation going on without mediation going on. We'll see where it goes. Obviously, it's a speed bump today. That's the red tape section of the Monday Smash, brought to you by State Farm agent Russ Voorhis. Now to the fun parts. We'll get to the portal in a little bit. Get your questions ready for Ira and I in the chat. Director Ben Spicer behind the scenes. He'll be collecting those questions and we'll answer whatever you'd like to do towards the end of the program today. But how about the spring showcase? Okay. When it started, Ira, I'm from afar. I'm taking it in like a lot of people who are watching right now. And I'm seeing situational drills. I'm seeing a lot of interviews on the sidelines by the ACC network. I'm worrying. Then I see special teams. I'm thinking, oh boy, we're at 4:15, 20 after 4. What are we doing? Then they get into a 15-minute quarter and a 10-minute quarter. I'm curious your thoughts. You've seen every practice that Florida State has rolled out there this spring. Your thoughts on what it looked like versus what you thought, what it looked like versus what you've seen as you've attended practice and covered practice this camp.
Yeah, there's a lot of distinctions there. I think that I've got kind of three viewpoints. One is having seen practices for a month, and I know we have a benefit that a lot of the viewers don't, but they've heard us talking about this team for a month. It wasn't far off from what we've seen. There was nothing that was like, oh my goodness, I totally whiffed on that, or I thought this was totally different from what we expected. I would say though that the passing game, and really the offense overall, but definitely the passing game didn't feel as good as we had seen it in the last couple of weeks. Part of that was DJ, maybe part of that was receivers. Part of it also was something I didn't realize until I went back and watched it last night. When you watch the replay of it, man, the defense, look, either Adam Fuller called the spring showcase of his life, or those guys know this offense really well, because there's a lot of those plays. I mean, there's a play, one of the times DJ keeps it because the screen pass isn't there. Well, you go back and watch, the reason the screen pass isn't there, literally, I think maybe one guy went in motion, and then the safety, I think it was KJ Kirkland, I need to go back and watch, makes a beeline, I'm telling you, 90 miles an hour to where that screen is supposed to hit. And I mean, that maybe that's great film study. Maybe it's a perfect call into that situation. It just felt like there were several plays like that. The Marvin Jones near interception. It's third and 10. They run a zone blitz, which again, Adam Fuller also dialed up a lot of blitzes. So to me, this was not a game where they were really trying to make DJ look great or the passing game look great. I mean, they dialed up a lot of pressures. On that play, it's a zone blitz. The linebacker comes. Marvin Jones drops back into coverage, but he doesn't just drop back into coverage, man. He darts straight to where that receiver is going to be dragging. And DJ never looks to the backside because I don't know for sure, but I don't know that he's even coached to, because it's basically catch it, the drag's coming and hit it. And that's where Marvin Jones comes in front of him. He never saw him and he couldn't have seen him. I mean, there's no way you have time on that play to scan the whole field. So, you know, I just felt like there were a lot of things like that. There was another play where Justin Cryer looked like he knew exactly where a pass was going to go. And again, I'm not making excuses for DJ, but the defense played really, really well. And I think it's a very, very good defense. But I also felt like there were some signs that maybe they had a feel for maybe what was coming. Those are some of my big picture takeaways.
Well, and look, we can't give away, you know, the things we see in practice, but when they finally present something, like, for example, Bryson Estes started the game at left guard, and, you know, I'm able to say at that point, I feel comfortable. I saw a little bit of that at practice, you know, so there is, you know, there's precedent. That wasn't something that was, you know, shocking when he came out there, because we have the benefit of going to practice. You know, just from reading a lot of the updates, Ira, a lot of the observations that you put up or Corey puts up over the practices I didn't see, you know, batted away a screen pass is something that I read most every day. So I feel like, to your point, maybe they were very ready for that. It's almost 2 years ago before the season started. How many times did they run a Philly special in fall camp? It was to the point where a linebacker or a safety would abandon their responsibilities in a play and just run to a spot because they know the 2-point play is going to be a Philly. So it's anticipation because it's a habit. So I get your point there. Also, I think the secondary is really good. And when you're talking about wide receivers getting open, we had that discussion today on the Cameron Show, and we'll get to Vandravius Jacobs entering his name into the portal, and we'll discuss portal in a little bit. But I think, you know, Ira, they probably could use some help at wide receiver, but you can't have that discussion without talking about how talented the defensive backfield is, right?
That's a great point. And that was the other thing when I went back and watched. You know, we can – you know, it's easy after the game, or you're watching it live, to think, well, DJ, that wasn't a great decision. That guy wasn't really open. And then you go back and watch, and there really wasn't a whole lot of people ever open on a lot of those plays. I mean, everybody is covered. Now, you know, again, I think that speaks to both sides. This defense is really good. These DBs are really good. I feel like the pass rush was pretty good. And then you don't have great receivers, especially when Malik Benson went down. And that position, man, that to me, and I know we're going to talk about some of what we think, you know, Florida State should do in the portal. That position, wide receiver, I went into this really the spring, but even the last week or so, feeling as if wide receiver is a luxury, you know, and if a good receiver came in, that's where I got into about a week ago. If a good receiver came into the portal and you could get him, go get him, because you need another good, really good receiver. I hadn't been really impressed with a lot of those guys. And the younger guys just aren't there yet. Now, after seeing that game, I think that's not at the top of my list. I think they have to go get a receiver. And, you know, that's not because Malik Benson got hurt. I think we think he's going to be okay. But it just, to me, you've got some guys that have been here a long time that just, if it hasn't happened and you're in your fourth or fifth year, it's not going to happen. It's just not to the point it needs to. And those young guys, I just don't get the sense that they're ready. Now, there's 4 more months, but, man, this team is too good to not have a couple of really good weapons at receiver. And now, we don't know. If Destin Hill is back, then that would change things maybe a little bit. But I haven't seen enough from the young guys or the old guys to feel like they can just look at it as a luxury to go get a receiver.
It's funny. In the postgame show, the tenor, Gene started it, and I'm like, yeah, I'm with you, Gene, about the receiver room. And for me, it was because Benson went down. It's not about the severity of what happened there. I believe you said something that you know, hints at an okay outcome with Malik and what happened on Saturday. Right. But when he does go down, Ira, and you live in that world where you have to complete a drive, you know, you have to go out there for a series or two or three, and Malik is not a part of that rotation – it feels a little dire. You know, like there's a whole lot of speed underneath. We really like the running game. They threw Jalen Lucas out there, which is great, in the end around game or the jet game, whatever. But you're going to need to be able to run the football if Malik is not available. That's what I felt like on Saturday. You shouldn't feel that desperate, you know, not at Florida State. And so we'll have that discussion in just a little bit about the portal. But it's funny, even though we get to see practices, when you get into a setting like that, you can walk away with a bit of a different takeaway. And I think it sounds like most of us on the staff here believe that receiver priority is just climbing up the ranks.
And I think most people that watched it, and I will say that I don't want to, you know, I'm not overreacting to just that day because we do get to watch. But I feel like, you know, early in the spring, one of the things I said, I think it was on a Smash, and I think I said on Headlines too, was, you know, you really notice the difference not having Keon because you don't, and Johnny, because you're not seeing receivers go get the ball. Like, if they're open, a lot of these receivers, if they're open, they'll catch it most of the time. Or if they get behind a secondary, they'll catch it most of the time. But you weren't seeing a lot of guys win those contested passes, even in one-on-ones or in 7-on-7 or 11-on-11. Sometimes one-on-one, but not a lot in 7-on-7 or 11-on-11. And so I was lamenting that. The last week or two, Malik Benson started winning a lot of those. And we saw that in the game on Saturday. So I felt confident he's that guy. But, you know, I'm at the point now, and especially because a couple of those passes that were completed in that game, you know, chances to, you know, or not completed, you know, either dropped or a chance to make a play, catch it and make a play. And then that doesn't happen. You just stumble down. I mean, it's just, if it hasn't happened yet, when's it ever going to happen? And you know, you mentioned Vandrevious Jacobs going to the portal, and I'm not going to bash the kid because it always sounds like you're, you know, running down a kid after he leaves. But this spring, he could not have been more quiet. I don't know if that's because he already knew he was going to leave. I don't know if it's because he wasn't what we saw last spring. I think we need to go back. I want to go back and try to remember who actually played DB in that spring, because Vandrevious and Kentron looked great in that spring. And I don't know if either one of them has looked great since, really. Not trying to kill you, Kentron, but so I, you know, again, I just, it hasn't been there. So I know a lot of people are lamenting Vandrevious leaving. I don't think that's going to affect this season at all. And I don't know for sure it was going to affect anything down the road.
Yeah, I saw a comment from Nico in the chat, and Nico says, predicting Elijah Moore is going to show up and make us forget who might have left. As high school highlight films go, you know, high school highlight tape, I never want to call it, I've watched his film. It's his huddle. It's the best plays of the season. I looked at his film, and it's not film. It's a highlight reel. But that little rant aside, as far as huddle clips go, Elijah Moore's is very impressive, and he has some of what you're talking about, Ira, which is contested catchability. It's a lot to ask from a true freshman, but you never know. Maybe that's a player who can phase in towards the end of the fall. Very impressive player coming in, but the portal is probably where we want to shop a little bit more. We're going to get to our a couple more storylines on the spring game in a moment. But first, we want to tell you, State Farm agent Russ Voorhis, an awesome sponsor of War Chant for a long, long time. Before there was ever a War Chant TV, Russ Voorhis was a supporter of warchant.com. He's one of the long time. There's a list of people. Ira, as you climb up the list of big time donors and supporters of Florida State Athletics, like, it shrinks and the names, it's now down to 20 people, then 10. Russ Voorhis has been a staunch supporter of Florida State Athletics for a long, long time. And you can find his services. They're available to you in the state of Florida, Alabama, and Georgia. So if you want to talk Noles and you want to support a Nole, Ira, you would agree, I know, that Russ Voorhis is your guy.
Yeah, and I actually talked to Russ the other day, and he's been really happy with the feedback he's been getting from FSU fans who've heard about him on the Smash. And he's gotten – I think he had a couple new deals last week where FSU fans were clients of other customer or other insurance agents, gave him a chance. They liked what he said, and now they're switching to his company. So, yeah, I definitely encourage you to at least call and talk to Russ or one of his people. He's got offices in Jacksonville Beach and Orange Park, but also they service the tri-state, Florida, Georgia, and Alabama. And, you know, you can go to russvoorhis.com and get more information or, you know, set up a consultation.
He's the real deal. He supports the Noles at that level that we're implying here. So give him your support. Ask him some questions, too, if you're just curious. He knows the business inside and out. So, Ira, I want to give away my I've done this on a couple of shows. But my award for the player that impressed me the most goes to running back Keziah Holmes. I thought he was fantastic on the day. Everything that he did well. When he had a chance to break a run, he did. When he had a chance to break a tackle, he ran through Shaheem Brown. Maybe Shaheem wasn't fully square, but still, that's an impressive feat. When he had a chance to protect against a blitzer, Omar Graham coming up the middle, he did. Lead block, he did. That's such a crowded room that I think a performance like one that Keziah had on Saturday in the spring showcase might earn him some credit, some equity as we go into the offseason, as we go into fall camp. I actually thought the running game was okay. The offensive line got pushed around for stretches, but I didn't think the running game was that bad. Started slow, but then they started to hit on some. Roy Dell did, Keziah did, Jalen Lucas hit one up the middle as time went on in that showcase. Do you have a player that stood out for you that you want to wave the banner for, or is there a theme that you'd rather talk about that you took away from the day?
Well, one thing I want to say on the running game real quick is just it was okay. It was also very hit or miss. Like, you know, you had a few big runs. You had several decent runs. And then you had, I think I had 10 carries by the running backs. The scholarship running backs had 10 carries for 1 yard or less. That's not great. You know, they got stoned at the line several times, including, I mean, Tofili, all of them. They all had carries like that. And that's not on them necessarily. It's usually on the offensive line. But that was a little, you know, bothersome, I guess. But as far as a player, I continue to really like Justin Crier. I thought he looked good in some of the when I went back and watched it. I think again, I don't know if anybody stood out that I wasn't expecting.
Right.
Conrad Hussey's physicality, Corey gets upset with Conrad Hussey because every time he slams a guy down after a play, Corey's like, "What are you doing? He's your teammate." But Conrad Hussey's physicality is noticeable. Like, I think he's going to be a guy that people are going to like the way he plays. Just that nastiness that you used to see from, you know, the Jalen Ramseys and those kinds of guys. Edwin Joseph, I thought, played well. The backup corners, I thought, played really well. Quindarius Jones continues to be really good. That DB room, just everywhere you look, it impresses me.
I thought, you know, the offensive line started out with Bryson Estes at left guard. Then they rotated in the two SEC guys. And hopefully the news is good, obviously, on Terrence T.J. Ferguson, because he got rolled up on towards the end of those. Man, they were like a drive away from putting him on the sideline, too, Ira. That pissed me off.
I just from what I'm hearing, it doesn't sound like anybody that got injured in that game is a long-term thing. Like, anything that's going to affect this fall, at least – it's what it sounds like preliminarily. I don't think anybody that you saw get hurt in that scrimmage is their status is really in jeopardy for the season.
That would be huge, because when you had Ferguson and Leonard at your two guards, you started to move guys around. They did a good job and handling as much as anyone can. Daryl Jackson winning some one-on-ones, creating seams, things like that. To me, it looks like those two transfers might be your starting guards. But again, it's only one day. It's in the spring showcase. DJU's performance, we've got a piece right now up on warchant.com. Corey Clark wrote, and it's about an up and down day, but how the spring overall went well. What's your takeaway, Ira? Was Saturday emblematic of what you've seen from DJU the last month? Was it a little better, a little worse? And where do you think he stands, and where do you think the staff believes he is in his growth of being at Florida State?
You know, when I left the scrimmage and I left, you know, again, like when I left the showcase, I felt – I was a little disappointed that he didn't hit more throws, because he had really been coming on the last couple of weeks. And I knew that, you know, the fan base has not been out of practice. So they're, you know, they hear what we say, but they needed to see it for themselves. And when the passing game didn't really click, that disappointed me, because now I think that you're going to have a lot of people. We see it on our message boards and elsewhere, where some people want to take a wait and see approach, but other people are like, okay, he stinks. You know, like you're hearing some of that. So that disappointed me. But when I went back and watched it, I felt better about the way he played. You know, I didn't, again, a lot of those plays where it felt like he forced something, nothing was open. There was one or two throws that he'd like to have back, but yeah, Jordan missed a couple throws here or there. And one of them, obviously, was the one to Ja'Kai where DJ is kind of rolling and it kind of looked like maybe threw off the wrong foot or something. But anyway, the pass went short. Ja'Kai couldn't make a play on it. That would have been a nice play. There might have been one other. The deep ball to Malik, I think, maybe wasn't right on target. But for the most part, I thought he was fine. I think he played well. And I think he's going to be – that's only after a month of practice. I think four more months, I think they're going to really build a plan around him. And that was going up against a good defense. I felt like I knew a lot what was coming. So I'm bullish on him, and I think they are as well. I don't know what to tell you. I understand anybody that's watching this that thinks I'm a homer or I'm full of it or I don't know what I'm seeing, and I get it. I'm just telling you, the last couple weeks he's looked really good. And when I went back and watched it, I didn't put a lot of the blame for what happened in that scrimmage on him. Even the DJ Lundy play, I mean, that was great coverage. I mean, that's going to happen. And it just happened that the ball went up straight. He didn't throw a pick. He threw a ball that maybe should have been a little further out. But DJ makes a great play on it. And I think people should be happy about that. DJ Lundy made a play in coverage. And the only reason it looked like it could have been a pick is because the ball just happened to go straight up in the air. That's a fluke. It was a broken up pass. But, you know, again, it wasn't like a – I don't know. I mean, I feel fine about him. I think he's going to be really good. I after seeing how much he improved over the last two or three weeks, I really can't wait to see what he looks like after these next 4 months.
Yeah, I was glad to see a couple of Thursdays ago when I was in town. He had a good day, like a really good day. And there was a series of three or four throws that, you know, they are vintage, if you will. I don't know if I want to use vintage on a kid who's under 25 years old, but like vintage DJU throws, exactly what you would think. Strong arm, unlocking different parts of the field, getting down in a space where most, you know, members of the secondary wouldn't even think they have to defend. And it's just, there it is. It's over the top. It's a laser, 65, 70 yards down the field. Nico, I think, again, makes a good point, which it's vanilla offense against a good defense. He says, awesome. It could very well be. I don't think Mike Norvell's rolling into Saturday spring showcase scheming to beat the defense the way he would an opponent in September.
100%. And I agree completely. And I also thought, you know, there was a practice two practices ago, I think it was, where they ran a lot of red zone stuff, I think. And Norvell, man, opened the bag of tricks, dude. They ran a bunch of stuff and the defense was caught unawares. I mean, it was like, it was a reminder that if Mike wants to scheme it up, Mike can scheme it up. And they hit on a lot of bunch of plays. When you watch a lot of those routes, I mean, everything, it wasn't like, there weren't running pick plays. I mean, it's very, I do think it was very vanilla and just didn't do anything to help him out. Also, I think his day looks a lot better. I know I sound like an apologist, but you know, if Kentron catches that ball, the ball in the end zone, Darion can't make, it gets broken up.
I thought that was his best throw of the day. That was
enough. Yeah. And I'm not trying to kill the receiver, but I feel like you could position your body a little bit better and shield off that defender. So anyway, it was just, and it was a nice play by the DB. I just think a few things could have gone differently and made his day look a whole lot better. I think he's going to be good, and I think he's going to be really good. One other thing he did, you know, there's one surprise I hadn't noticed in practice, but he's really good on the zone read stuff. Like he knows, I mean, not only the one we talked about after the game, Corey mentioned it, you know, the one touchdown run where he really holds it for a long time for Roydell. He had another one. He had a couple others where he reads the defensive end perfectly, and he takes it, the defensive end crash, he takes it around the side, and you know, they blow the whistle after 5 or 6 yards, but in a game, there's no way that they're stopping that. So I knew he could be a weapon in the running game. I didn't realize he runs the zone read as well. I mean, he looks like he really can run that.
Yeah, he's got whatever that is, the split second decision making capability to know what to do with the football. He's got an IQ when it comes to running the football. Dominic Robinson did the breakdown on that. You could see it. He's got an idea of timing and pacing. He's just not fleet of foot. He's got heavy feet. But once he gets motoring and moving, Ira, he's a weapon. And I think it was important, probably to Mike Norvell, I'm assuming here, that they put that on film. You know, they put the showcase stuff out there for opponents to consider that, we're not reluctant to run DJU. We will run him. And it's not just in third and one. We'll run him on first and 10. We'll keep you honest. And even if that's a gain of 6 and he slides, Ira, in Dublin in game one, like that's an effective way to hold a defender. I think they were cheating last year against Jordan. They said, go ahead, run. We dare you. We don't believe it. And most of the time he didn't. About Florida State getting better as a football program. They were finally able as of midnight or 12:01 this morning to start working on the portal. Ira and I are going to talk about what we think Florida State needs to do. You've already heard one position, but we're going to rank it out and we're going to bring that list to you after this message from State Farm agent Russ Voorhis.
Contact Russ Voorhis for an auto quote today.
apologies for not bringing the game show music with us, but we are. I'm going to play off of the Supermarket Sweep logo. I kind of ripped it off here. Director Ben can pull this up, but we're calling it Super Portal Sweep. And this is Ira's top three list of needs. This is my top three list of needs or wants. It's my word. I use wants. I don't know. They've got a lot of the pieces that they need, Ira, but in a perfect world, here's where you would go. These are our top threes, and I see that we have the same positions, just ranked a little bit differently. Tell us about your list and why you believe wide receiver has climbed all the way to the top of what Florida State needs to do as it hits the portal this week.
Yeah, I think they should start a game show where, like, maybe you have a big supermarket and you put, like, transfer players around the market, and you've got to coaches have to race through to find the portal targets that they need. Maybe, or it could be a blind test. They just pick like a game show and then see if they got the ones they needed. But I moved receiver up. I had it more as to me going into the spring game, I thought defensive tackle was one position where they definitely needed somebody. And again, not to start, I think Josh Farmer, Daryl Jackson, the guys they've got behind them are really good, but I feel like they just need one more good defensive tackle in that group. You lost so many guys from last season, and they brought in a couple, but I think they need more. If you brought in a defensive end, like I feel like maybe you put Tamiwa Durajaye in the middle, and then you get a defensive end outside. So I feel like that could be an end instead of a tackle, but I'd prefer to be a tackle. But then, yeah, after watching the spring game, I just feel like the receiver moved to the top of my list. I think with DJ's arm, it would be a waste to not have some better receivers. And I haven't seen enough to feel super confident in that group. I love Malik Benson. I think he's going to be a stud, but I think they need another stud to go with him. And I think that changes your whole team if they have that. I think the running game is going to be good. But DJ, you know, I think Corey and Aslan were talking about on Wake Up Warchant this morning that these receivers probably aren't any worse than the 2022 Florida State offense, which was good. You know, it was a good offense. But the difference is that 2022 offense had Jordan Travis running around and making plays. DJ's not going to be that guy. So you need another playmaker at receiver. And I just don't have confidence right now in those other guys. Now, if Mike Norvell and the staff see something differently, then they got to act appropriately. But I after this whole spring, I just feel like they need another playmaker at receiver. And then, and I still think you need a defensive tackle. So basically, I now have those two positions of need, and then anything after that is kind of just a want. Whereas before, I thought they only had one need, and it was defensive tackle.
Yeah, I continue to put safety on my list. Interested to hear your answer, Ira. But when you didn't have a stabilizer like Akeem Dent out there, and I know he played better towards the end of the season, but he was at least a stabilizer in the early part of the season. It didn't look disjointed. You weren't worried about missed tackles, bad angles, those types of things. It's a huge difference. And I know they've got options that are coming in the long term, but it wouldn't hurt to have another player in the short term that helps you bridge that gap to where Conrad Hussey takes over or any number of younger players that they might want to move over to safety. The other position that just made the cutting room floor for me was offensive line. Because if let's just say that the receiver option you get, let's say you grab one out of the portal and he's a nice player, but he's not Keon Coleman. Very hard to find Keon Coleman's. Then you're really going to need play action to work. And the only way that play action works is if your running game is good. And I think they've got a core here, probably like four dudes that are definite, they can advance the mission. It wouldn't hurt to get another offensive lineman in there. So that's the one that just made the cutting room floor for me. But I echo your sentiments about receiver and defensive tackle. Your thoughts on any of that?
Yeah. I would say offensive tackle and safety might be co-threes.
Yeah.
On that list for me, I think that I feel a little bit better about the other safeties than you do. I think Conrad's going to be good. I think KJ Kirkland has really come on. I like him. Devontae Brown is a guy that can play there that I didn't expect. And Ashlyn Barker can play. So I'm not as, I think with the defensive line and what you have at corner and at nickel corner and the other safety, I feel like you're not going to be too exposed if you don't have a great safety. And I think those other guys are adequate. But, yeah, if you could get a good one, it would help. I just think there's other areas that might help more. And then offensive tackle, I would, for the offensive line, I would just say strictly a tackle. And, you know, and I think you guys touched about this on Jeff's show today, that, you know, if you've got Darius Washington, if Robert Scott does come back healthy, you know, maybe it's not a pressing knee, but you it would be nice to have some more quality options.
If you could promise me that Robert Scott gives you 12 games this season, then it's not, you're going to be fine at that point. But
nobody can promise that, unfortunately.
No, that you got to look at that as a luxury. And if it does happen, then wow, what depth you have. I continue to be impressed by Andre Otto, Ira. I mean, it's probably too much too soon to ask for contributions at tackle this year. But man, I don't think, at least for me in the two practices that I saw, he did nothing to slow down my personal hype machine. Just in between my ears, this personal hype machine is going for Andre Otto. I think he's going to be a really nice player here for at least a couple of seasons. Did you take that away from watching the trenches?
All spring. I mean, I like him a lot. In fact, I liked him last year when he first came in. He's much more physical than I expected. Because again, if people have watched any interviews we've done with Andre since he's been at Florida State, not that there's any correlation between what your interests are off the field and what you are on the field. There's been plenty of players that have done tremendous things. But he's like, when you talk to Andre the first couple times, he talks about his film interests and he wants to be a director and super smart kid. And he's from Key West, which is not really a hotbed for football. So like all of the stereotypes for me to think he's not going to be a real physical kid, and was dead wrong. Yeah, man, he puts his head in there, his nose in there. He is a physical football player. It's fun to watch him play.
Man, you saying people from Key West can't be tough? Come on, man.
I'm just saying not known as, you know, I mean, it's been a minute since the Key West Conks or whatever they are have made a run to the state championships.
It's a new pipeline. We're going to call it the Andre Otto pipeline. So for Florida State, a couple of players, at least at this point, as we're talking out 7:43 p.m. on a Monday night, Vandravius Jacobs has entered the portal. I believe David Stickle as well entered the portal.
Saddens me a little bit real quick. One of his high school coaches was at practice recently, and I was talking to him. I said, man, I need to do a story on David Stickle. I wanted to do a story on him last fall, just never got around to it. And I was like, man, I think I'm going to do a story on him this summer because he's an interesting guy. Came here as a walk-on tight end and just kept getting bigger and stronger. They moved him into a backup center role just because he could snap. They had nobody that could snap accurately, so they needed somebody in practice when they wanted to limit Maurice Smith. And he could do that, but he's put on weight and worked. And he can play center. He's not, you know, he's not threatening Maurice Smith, but he can play a little bit. I'm glad for him that he feels like he can get an opportunity somewhere else. And I think he could, because he can snap and he's big enough at some levels. He's just not big enough probably for Florida State. And so I'm sad to see him go, because I think he's been a cool story. But I mean, hopefully he'll get a chance to play somewhere.
Yeah, my thought on that is, so you're telling me there's a couple of center options here? That's good. for Florida State behind Maurice, hopefully they continue to in the offseason, cross-train and cultivate some things there. And then for Dre, you know, you already addressed Vandravius Jacobs. He'd been quieter, in the practice fields this spring. He made some plays here and there, but this isn't unexpected. It's not like a, whoa, didn't see that coming kind of moment, correct?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, I hate to – we all do this in the media, and I hate to do it. You know, you pile dirt on kids when they leave. But, you know, they weren't happy with him at times last year. And I'm not saying everybody, but you would hear whispers from certain people in the program that weren't thrilled with some of maybe his decisions or just the way he handled himself sometimes. And so it wasn't like a total shock that it wasn't working out. But what really bothered me again is just the lack of production on the field. I mean, there was a play last week. This is just kind of a silly thing, but like there's a play last week. You saw the footage on Twitter of the play where Malik Benson shook the DB. I think it was Rawls with like that nasty triple move. I mean, it was like two double moves.
Yeah.
And I was over by the indoor facility. So I just saw the front of the jersey and I thought, oh, good for Vandravius. Like I thought, I had not seen Malik Benson do that. I've seen Vandravius do stuff like that. So I thought it was Vandravius, and I actually wrote that. And then I heard Aslan and Corey talking on the podcast, and he says Malik, and I'm like, what? So I texted a couple other people on the beat, and shout out to Chris Knee. He told me, yeah, it was Malik. And so, but then I was just like, oh, that's right. I haven't seen Vandravius do much of any, you know, I mean, just has not been a factor much in this camp, and that's unfortunate. So I'm not trying to bury him, but yeah, to your point, it's not going to affect their plans, I don't think, for this fall. Hey, headliners and elite headliners. It's Ira here, and it's time to talk Shopify. As you remember, a couple of years ago, we wanted to create and sell headlines merch for the best podcast listeners in the world. That's you. But we had no idea where to get started. Now we're selling Yay Sausage shirts, and it's so easy. All because we use Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're a startup working out of your man cave or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool you need to grow your business without all the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. You could be selling Don Julio socks from Shopify's in-person point-of-sale system or offering headliner shirts from Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform. Whatever you need, you're covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love most about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up today for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/warchant, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/warchant, all lowercase, and they'll help you grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Go to shopify.com/warchant.
Yeah, it's agreed. There was promise there because just the way he got out of his breaks last year. I mean, I know what you're talking about earlier in the program. Like, who was covering him again? Because they weren't anywhere near him. There was potential there. But Ron Dugans even went on record. You know, I interviewed him at one point and asked about Vandravis. It might have been the coach's luncheon last fall. And his answer is, I need to see more consistency. I'm like, ouch. He just came off a great spring. What do you mean you need to see more consistency? I thought it, you know, the arrow was pointing up. And Coach Dugans is not afraid to challenge his receivers when the camera's rolling and the microphone is on. And we'll see what he does for the next part of his career. But we're expecting attrition from Florida State at the receiver position in that receiver room. That's something we expected. Maybe not a younger player at being the first off the list, but we'll see what transpires the next couple of days. In the last 15 or so minutes that we have here on the Monday Smash, if anything breaks news-wise, we'll have it for you. But we're taking your questions now, and Director Ben has lined up quite a few for us. If you want to add some more questions, whether you're on Facebook or YouTube, make sure to hit that thumbs up. We appreciate that. And then Director will find your questions, star them, and we'll get to them as best we can before the show is concluded. Greg, is there any way to make the spring showcase a better experience for traveling fans? I miss the traditional spring game. That's not an easy answer to this one, Ira. What do you think?
Yeah, man, it's unfortunate, but I would not travel great distances to go to the spring showcase anymore. I mean, no offense to you. I mean, I'm not trying to like say this. It's you shouldn't go. But to me, like, if you're going to go to that anytime, as long as Mike Norvell's the head coach, and probably as long as anybody's the head coach, unless they get a coach who just decides to go back to the old format, you know, look at it as a chance to, you know, maybe you have friends that go to the game and you want to interact with your friends in a football environment. Or if you're just so diehard to see, like Marvin Jones, I do think there was a lot of guys on this roster that were new to you. So you could have gotten that experience. That, you know, what does Marvin Jones look like? What does Roy Dell Williams look like? What, you know, just Earl Little? I mean, on and down the list, 14 transfers and a dozen or 14 or 15 freshmen. So, but in terms of like a game experience, like it's just not going to happen. And as far as other activities, I mean, I guess they could do more around it. I know a lot of people always want baseball to be played. I know softball and baseball were both on the road this weekend. That was unfortunate. But, you know, I don't know. I think we all have memories of what spring football games used to be. And I don't know. It's still like that some places, but I don't know if it's going to be here like that again.
Well, I know that, you know, the scheduling for the way the coaching staff wants to lay it out against the Easter holiday, spring break, and then, you know, the way the ACC schedules, it's bat and ball sports. Sometimes it doesn't line up. They've been unlucky in that regard. But there's one thing that I don't think is going to happen again. I don't think they're going to schedule the spring game or the spring showcase the weekend when the portal's opening. Like after the man, that just seems like a very inefficient and unlucky thing where the portal is beginning. Mike Norvell wants to be the first at everything. You think about a lot of the players that have committed to Florida State or enrolled in Florida State out of the portal. You usually hear that Florida State's one of the first to call. Now, there were some restrictions this time around based upon the ACC or the NCAA ruling. But I don't think they're going to do that again where the portal opens and they're still conducting spring practice.
I think, you know, what they put a priority on, I think this was one of those situations where there was no good answer. But I really don't think they wanted to have spring break. You know, spring break is decided by the university. They don't have a choice in that. And probably to some degree by the state. And Florida State the football coach doesn't get a vote. And I really think he did not want to start a week. What they did last year was they started a week of practice, then had a week off for spring break, and then they came back and practiced again. I think he really wanted to start after spring break. And once they did that, that set everything else in motion. So it just was not a great situation and just didn't all work out this year.
Johnny Buckets asks here, if you could set a starting 4 wide receiver core right now, who would you choose?
Well, we definitely know Malik Benson. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ja'Kai Douglas.
Yeah. Ja'Kai. I mean, look, they haven't entered the portal. Kentron.
And I mean,
maybe split out Jalen Lawrence.
Well, we don't know. And we don't know for sure. There's nothing confirmed yet about Destin Hill when he'll be back. But if we take him out of the equation right now, Malik and Ja'Kai Douglas are the two no doubters, you know, of what's available. I would say probably Kentron, and I'd go with Jalen Brown is the other maybe slot guy. I like him a lot, by the way. And Hakeem, I'd have Hakeem probably come off the bench, and Darion Williamson, if he's still here, coming off the bench. But I think, you know, that's a pretty good group. I mean, I think, you know, those are some talented, and Ja'Kai and Malik Benson are proven guys. And I think, you know, Kentron's close to that. I like Jalen Brown a lot. I mean, for anybody that's worried about Vandrevious Jacobs, I think Jalen Brown's an upgrade from that.
And the other part of it is, you know, like I know that people get frustrated with this, but if Florida State's going to run bubbles and they're going to use their speed to the edge and things like that, Hakeem can be useful at least right now as a blocker.
He's a great blocker.
Right, right.
Very willing blocker, which is awesome.
I get frustrated when I say it. I understand you out there saying, I want him to catch the ball, Tom. I get it. But, you know, for what he has right now, he's very adept at that. They're going to need that. I don't think we're going to be here a year from now on the Monday smash after the showcase saying, what happened to Hakeem Williams? Why didn't it ever take? I don't think that's going to be a problem as we go.
No, and it's just, you know, again, at practice, if he's going up against Azaria Thomas or Fentrell Cypress, you're talking about older dudes who played a lot more college football. I mean, Azari basically was a starter last year. And the year before that, he played a ton of reps as a kind of a dime, you know, extra defensive back. And he's a year older than Hakeem. Hakeem missed half of his first year and didn't come in great shape when he first got here. So he's way far behind from somebody like that. So Azari has got a year and a half on him and is an elite defensive back. Ventrell's got 4 years on him. And Quindarius is a really good corner. I mean, there's no break from their corners, and those other guys are his classmates. So, no, I think he could play. I just don't think he's one of your starters right now.
Briley asks, and I'm going to yield to you, Ira, for most of this answer, because you saw a lot of pretty much all of spring camp. Which player had the best camp, and then which player surprised you the most? I'll answer question two very quickly. That's Jalen Lucas. I know that's old news. I've seen fast. We've seen fast. That's faster. Couldn't believe it. You guys were talking about him. Like, I get it. They're fast people. We've had some. Then I get there the first day. I'm there within 5 plays. I go, oh, well, I see why y'all are bringing it up. But what do you say about those two questions?
Yeah, he's definitely the most surprising. As far as the player of the best camp overall, I mean, I'm going to say Malik Benson, but I'm going to give a nod also to Marvin Jones Jr., man. I think that kid's special. And Patrick Payton was great. He had a good camp, really good camp. But I think Marvin Jones Jr. really could be. And what I liked about Marvin Jones Jr., going back and watching the video, watching the replay of the game, when he doesn't make the play on the interception, he looks distraught. Like, he looks like he could not be more upset that he didn't intercept that pass. And then I was the jerk that asked him in the press conference about not making the interception, and he wasn't real thrilled about talking about that. So that was one. That was like the thing I didn't know about Marvin Jones Jr. You could watch him in practice, do pass rush drills, run the length of the field when he's racing Norvell. I mean, it's not normal to be that big and that fast. He is a freakish athlete. I didn't know what he'd be like as a competitor. I love that. I love this physicality in that spring game. So he might be my guy on defense.
So that's a good surprise. It's a good answer for me as well. He surprised me with how fluid he is and explosive he is. I'm not saying that, you know, I was thinking that he wouldn't do anything, that the five-star rating was bogus, Ira. But, you know, I would assume with a couple of years, you might appear on the stat sheet a little bit more at Georgia. And when he got here, I'm wondering what gives. And then within one practice, it was crazy. I mean, just how fluid he is at that size, because he does look like Jermaine. It's just, it's like a different type of player. And I don't know if you caught this on the rewatch on the when you went back and looked at the showcase, but apparently Mike Norvell told the broadcast crew that his ascent as a defensive lineman is higher and faster than anyone they brought in out of the portal in Mike Norvell's time in Tallahassee, which I thought was an unbelievable nugget of information.
Yeah, no, I did not hear that. In fact, when I was watching it, I was watching something else with the sound on, and I was watching it on my iPad, so I didn't catch that. But so I missed a lot of, I'm sure, insightful Pete Thamel commentary. Oh. But although EJ, I did regret not listening, because I would like to hear what EJ had to say. But no, man, that's a huge statement. I think it's true, dude. I mean, like, you know, again, he didn't even play hand in the dirt defensive end at Florida State, at Georgia. And I mean, he, and that kid and that defensive line is legit. I'm excited. I thought Lilo-Ea played well too, and he's just a different kind of guy, but he played well.
James B. asking a legal question. Moving on, could Judge Cooper, and he said moving on from earlier, he wasn't bored of us talking about the spring showcase. Could Judge Cooper have ruled on the motion today without having FSU go back and amend the motion? I mean, it seems like to me that he did us a favor by pointing out the inadequacy of the argument and then allowing Florida State to come back. What do you think?
You could definitely make that case. And what he said was, he basically said he could have approved it, but he knew that the ACC would be licking their chops basically at the appeal. If they knew that everything wasn't buttoned up, that he could see them looking at that as a reason to appeal once it was all done. So he just didn't want to do that. He thought it was better for them to get it right. So I think you could make that argument. Not that he's helping Florida State, but he just didn't. He could have done it. Yes, he could have approved the. He could have denied their motion and moved forward, but I think he thought it might end up hurting Florida State down the road.
Briley asks, would we have felt considerably better if Glenn would have quarterbacked the other side? I say yes, if he's talking about who's running with the twos. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? Yeah, for sure. And probably – for sure. And I'm sorry if I'm having internet issues, but yeah, for sure. And probably Kromenhawk too. I mean, you know, look, they're both more ready – than Trevor Jackson. I like Trevor Jackson a lot. I think he's a talented kid. I think he's going to be really good. But those two guys are better. Brock, clearly, he's been in the system for a year. So, yeah, the offense would have looked better overall, which might have helped DJ. I'd agree with that.
Yeah. They were throwing a lot at Trevor. It was a crash course before the showcase, and you could hear it in Mike's voice and his post-practice availabilities. They had him on one kind of plan in terms of long-term development, and they were fast-tracking Luke a little bit more, and Brock had one. Yes. Yeah, so the answer is absolutely yes. Jamin asks, how's the offensive line looking compared to the last few years so far? Beefier. I think the guard play looks better to me, Ira, than last year. 2 years ago was pretty good, but last year was a little lacking. I like what I see there. And I see a couple of options that are younger in Lucas Simmons, but definitely Andre Otto. So I think better. Darius Washington had a really good camp too at left tackle, I thought. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. I thought some of the counter stuff worked better than it did last year, you know, just in a spring showcase. So that was exciting to see. It was good to see some of those linemen, especially those new ones you're talking about, Richie Leonard and even in Ferguson, getting out to the second level, you know, looking more athletic. And so, yeah, no, I think the line's going to be better, and I think they definitely think the line's going to be better. It's part of the reason they're so confident in the running game is that they think this offensive line's going to definitely be better this season.
Kurt asks on the Monday Smash, presented by State Farm agent Russ Voorhis, was Grady Kelly at least, the very least, serviceable? I say yes. Yes, he was. I think he's part of the rotation. What do you think, Ira?
For sure, for sure. Yeah, and I didn't mention him earlier, but yeah. So, I mean, I think let's just go through it for people real quick. So, you got Josh Farmer and Darryl Jackson will probably be your starters. Then you've got Grady Kelly. You've got KJ Sampson, who I think had a really good spring and looked good in the game. Daniel Lyons, who's now his third year in the program, is a quality second team type guy. And then you have Tomiwa. How do you say Tomiwa? Is it Tomiwa?
Tomiwa.
God, yeah. I always get that wrong. Sorry, Tomiwa. I should remember because they call him Tomi. But Tomiwa and Jai, they play sometimes at end or tackle. And then, you know, I think we all think they may go get a tackle in the portal.
Yep.
But if you get a good one in the portal, and if you're looking at, again, just go back, Josh Farmer, Darryl Jackson, then Grady Kelly and a kid you got out of the portal who's a proven defensive tackle, and then you've got KJ Sampson and Daniel Lyons, your third team defensive tackles, I think you're in great shape.
Another nugget for those of you who either muted or didn't watch the ACC Network stream, Braden Fisk said KJ Sampson is his guy. That's the guy that he circled that he thinks could emerge from the defensive tackle room. And Braden would know a thing or two about that.
And I'm with Braden. I like KJ Sampson a lot. You and I have been pretty high on Daniel Lyons all the time, but I feel like I'm more excited about the KJ Sampson now.
Yeah, agreed. As a true D tackle, I think Daniel's more disruptive in the backfield right now, but KJ's more complete as a defensive tackle. James B., thank you very much for the contribution. We appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you very much for being here on War Chant TV. James B. is always around, Ira.
You know, good to see him this weekend. Yeah, we could see him again recently. Yeah.
He was taken in your panel discussion on Friday night at the Battle's End event, as well as every other one of our events. So, James B., look forward to seeing you here in the not-too-distant future. Nico asks, how do you guys feel about right tackle? These are our last few questions before we sign off here on Monday Smash. I call it...
What's that emoji? You know what? You know what? You know what gene I didn't get? Like, what chromosome or whatever, what gene I didn't get in the gene pool is... understanding emojis like at first blush. Like so many times I'll see an emoji. I mean, I get smiling, I get winking, but there's so many of them that I'm like, what exactly does that mean? But Jeremiah Byers, I didn't think looked great. And this was going to be a big spring where we thought he was going to, Alex Atkins really said he thought he would take a big jump this spring after having a full year in the program. I don't know. I didn't see it. He looked fine, but he didn't look great.
Formerly of my top 40 list a year ago. Ouch. I call it concerning. I want to see how concerned the coaches are to see if they target anybody in the portal. I think it's concerning. That emoji, by the way, Ira, between my wife, Jamie, and I, we use that as the woozy face. We use it. Thank you, Director Ben.
I mean, what does that mean?
Okay.
They need like instructions for the boomers out there. What does that mean?
As if tired and emotional from inebriation. Now, that's funny. We don't use it for that. We use it for if you just had a really big nap or you're waking up and you're foggy brained, we call it the groggy. Uh-huh. It's the groggy emoji. So if one is groggy, uh-huh, that's what that is. Nico, thanks for the contributions tonight. Oh, I should also note, Ira, that James B., who just provided a super chat, was also extremely generous last week when we were raising money for the second harvest of the Big Ben. Not only did he support it from the golf tournament, James B. dropped a very sizable donation. So, James B., to your heart, thank you for the support for us, but I'm glad that you're tenfold supporting organizations like the second harvest of the Big Ben.
Good stuff. Yeah, for sure. There's one thing I wanted to, and I know you may have another question or two, but I wanted to say to follow up on what I said before about like when a kid goes in the portal, like I hate to be negative about them because it sounds like, oh, you're just dogging any kid that leaves. What I would say to argue against that is the two most recent, three most recent guys that left the basketball team, Jalen Worley, Cam Corhan, and Bobby Miller, all should have stayed, all needed to stay, all are bad signs that they're leaving. So I'm not trashing anybody that leaves. There have been some basketball players that left that I'm like, well, that's fine. Those three guys, I think it's a bad sign that they leave. And so I just want to use that as kind of just kind of defend myself a little bit because I don't want to be that guy that just piles on guys who transfer all the time.
Oh, yeah, you sucked anyway. Yeah, no, yeah. We know that's what you're about. No, I'm kidding. Matt Lacerre is offering his emoji services in addition to his work with the portal. Thank you, Matt. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it.
To the PRB, maybe he'll give us emojis on every one of the transfer portal targets for Florida State, how he feels.
You can give me a quiz after every one.
It's like facial recognition technology. Connor asks, what do you guys think about the progression of Kevin Knowles? Okay, I loved Kevin Knowles, the freshman, the guy who got downhill and made plays. He's been in non-contact for a long time. You saw him wearing the N7 on Saturday. It's hard to say. I think he's more fit for corner, but if there's no contact, it's hard to assess the ability, which I thought was his strength, getting downhill and making plays.
My theory on Kevin Knowles is a lot like Omar Graham. I think they were both hurt last year. I think it's probably not fair to judge them based on last year. So I think they're going to be better this year. But I also think Kevin Knowles will be better not playing safety. I think that was not a good experiment. Get him back to nickel corner. Get him rotating with Earl Little. I think he'll play better, especially if he's healthy. Then he may look like the guy we saw a couple years ago. On the other side of that, though, Omar Graham, I did not think played real well in this showcase. So, like, I'm defending him for his play last year. There were a couple of those runs where it looked like he got in the wrong gap. The linebackers definitely got in the wrong gaps. I don't know whose responsibility it was. Kind of looked like him, but on at least one of them. So, but the coaches are real high on Omar, so we'll see how it goes. But I think Kevin's going to have a much better year this fall.
Okay, rapid fire here at the end. How was Camden Fryer this spring? Asked Jamal. I say ahead of the curve, but I was limited in what I saw. What do you think, Ira?
Yeah, definitely had some splash plays. He had one catch 2 weeks ago, probably 2.5 weeks ago, on a deep ball that was phenomenal. I mean, it was from Luke. And man, it was a contested catch. He's getting grabbed and still makes the catch. It was awesome. He's got talent. He can play. But, you know, he's just got to get bigger and stronger and fast. You know, he's just an early enrollee. He should be in high school right now. So, but yeah, I like him a lot. I think he's going to be really good. I agree.
Dale, where do y'all see Keziah Holmes? I was very impressed with Saturday's performance. I think that's going to be a back and forth battle for all parties involved. And I don't know who's going to enter the portal, if anybody. There's a path to playing in Florida State. They like to rotate backs. There's not enough of a. There's only one football and like seven legitimate players. I think Keziah should be here though, because I think they can rely upon him to execute details, which are important. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I like Keziah, but I like that. I like Roydell. I like obviously LT and Jalen Lucas. Cam Davis is really talented. Sam Singleton had a couple nice runs on Saturday. If I had to pick a guy, and then they also are bringing in Makai Danzy. This fall, a freshman from Tallahassee who's a speedy running back. If I had to pick one who feels like he's not probably going to play this year, it would be Sam Singleton. So if he feels like if I'm not going to play, maybe that's just my guess. We don't know exactly what the coaches think. Then maybe he's a guy that just thinks, hey, if I'm not going to play, maybe I'll go somewhere else. But I can't see any of those other guys leaving because I think they're all a big part of the plans this season.
Last one is from Kayvon, and he usually likes to ask off-the-wall questions, and I appreciate that about Kayvon. He's usually on Facebook, too. Ira Tom, boiled peanuts or no? That's a no from me. That's a no.
That's a New Yorker. That's a New Yorker talking.
But standard peanuts. You give me the standard peanuts just so I can crack them. Sometimes I chew on them. I don't need the boiled peanuts. I just keep it nice and salty. Keep it nice. Keep it dry. There you go.
So – growing up in Miami, Tom, this is going to surprise you. I never heard of boiled peanuts until I got to college and went on some road trips across this great Southeast. And I would see these signs for boiled peanuts. I'm like, that sounds disgusting. Like, I don't even know what that is. And why would you do it? And like you, what's wrong with that perfectly good roasted peanut? Why are we boiling it? I was working in Thomasville, Georgia, covering high school baseball games. The little concession stand had boiled peanuts. I don't know where I got the nerve because I'm not a big experimental food guy. I'm pretty much standard vanilla stuff. But I was like, all right, let me try some boiled peanuts. Tom, I love boiled peanuts.
Really?
I love boiled peanuts. In fact, Kim will boil peanuts. I may ask her to go boil some peanuts tonight. They are incredible. They are so good. Have you tried them?
I've had them. It's been a long time, but we do have similar palates. You and I have similar palates. So I would go back to the well. Because you have gone to the well, but yes,
so good.
We had the out of towners experience as well because we would drive my sister up to she was in Osceola Hall in the early 90s, and we go through Perry and you'd see the sign for the roadside stuff, and my dad would be like, pecans. What the hell are pecans? And he keeps driving up. He's like, what are pecans? So, you know, the assimilation happened over time, but I never got so far as to embrace the boiled peanut. I'll give it another shot.
Next time you guys are coming over to the house, we're going to boil some peanuts in the house for you guys. Remind me. And they're, they're so okay. Good.
Now, Cajun style, I can get down with Cajun style anything. You could put like Cajun seasoning on a piece of paper and I will eat the piece of paper. I love Cajun seasoning.
I agree with James B. And somebody else said, as long as they're hot, R. Wilmer says, as long as they're hot, James B's like, I like them cold. Yeah, man. The next day I'll eat them out of the fridge. It doesn't matter, dude. They're phenomenal.
Wow. Okay.
They're so good. But the Cajun, I've only tried the Cajun one time, and it was at a gas station. So, and not like at the roadside stand outside of the gas station, inside the Circle K, pretty disgusting. So James B, I can't vouch for them, but I need to try them from a real reputable boiled peanut maker.
It sounds like I've got homework. I've got homework to do on the boiled peanuts. You out there have homework to do as well. Head over to warchant.com right now. It's $1 to sign up for your first month. If you haven't given us a shot now, there's a lot happening. Recap this smash. We talked about legal proceedings. We talked about the spring showcase itself, the transfer portal. Haven't even gotten into the recruiting class and what Florida State did to host 25 and 26 recruits this weekend. You'll find on warchant.com right now that there are RPMs galore, recruiting prediction machine picks for Florida State to land players, and the 25 class and the 26 class from our own staff, from our national writers like Steve Wiltfong. We're loaded up right now. Head over to warchant.com. It is $1 to sign up. And remember, tomorrow, if you are a Warchant subscriber, you have a deal waiting for you. 25% off all t-shirts at Garnet and Gold. 25% off. If you're a Warchant subscriber, head over to the Tribal Council tomorrow morning. Gene Williams will post your code that helps you save 25% off all t-shirts. That's the homework assignments I'm giving you. Ira, Professor Ira, Don Ira, any homework that you want to issue to the people?
I did want to give a shout out. Is it Tom Quitz? Mike, is that his last name?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. He actually stopped by the courtroom today, gave me a little legal insight there while we were talking, and was real helpful. Good guy. And obviously he's definitely an interested party. So it was cool to see him in the courthouse today. And I also just want to give a shout out. I'm sure you guys did on Jeff's show. I'm sure Corey and Aslan did on their show, but all the people we saw at the Battles End Again event Friday night, then again at the meet and greet at Corner Pocket on Friday night, and then the meet and greet at Hotel Duval, Hotel Indigo. Lord.
No, Tom. It's all right. No,
Indigo. Hotel Indigo.
It's all right. One's close.
Not the other hotel.
Yeah, one's close to the stadium, one isn't. It's that simple.
Hotel Indigo.
I heard you made an appearance at the CP after battles. Is that right?
I did. Because the moon was right there and swung by. The problem I have with the CP, Tom, is it's not really convenient to where I live. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was right there. And a lot of people were going from the Battle's End event, which was at the moon. A lot of people were going there afterwards, including Tom Block and many others. So yeah, I stopped by there a little bit. And then again, the thing at Hotel Indigo on Saturday was really cool too. It was a little smaller gathering, but just cool. I mean, that, you know, so many people like to come out and talk FSU football with us.
That's what we do on a daily basis at warchant.com and here on Warchant TV. Hit the like button, subscribe to the channel. We're going to have updates galore on the transfer portal. Our own Matt Lacerre is going to give you updates each day on the channel till it closes. So subscribe now. Head back over here in the morning. There's going to be news. It's coming. Florida State will have guys on the way out, guys on the way in, and we'll have you covered here on warchant.com. Until next time, enjoy the pecans, everybody. Enjoy all your pecans. And thanks to Ira. Thanks to Director Ben behind the scenes. And, of course, to James B. for the contribution. Good night, everybody. We'll talk to you next time on Warchant TV. Monday Smash presented by State Farm agent Russ Forrest.